It was like a great vertical trampoline. I leaned into it and sprang off again. It was fun. I did it again.
What are you doing?
Stacy asked as she approached.
Bouncing. That looks like fun. Can I bounce too?
Of course, I didn't have to answer her. In a flash, she was standing alongside of me, bouncing.
You have beautiful red hair and freckles, she said.
Oh, gosh. The heat rose instantly into my face and neck. I was sure I was close to the color of my hair. I quickly shot a glance in the direction of the boys. The last thing I wanted was for any of them to overhear her or see us playing together. I was safe. They hadn't noticed. We bounced a few more times before I heard the giggles from the girls' side of the yard. I turned my head, and not 10 feet from us were about a dozen girls. If at all possible, I got redder. One or two of the girls selected a spot in another section in the fence and began to bounce. It wasn't long before all the girls began selecting spots and bouncing on and off the big fence. Suddenly, I became aware of the laughter from the direction of the boys. I was afraid to look, but I did. To my surprise, they weren't laughing at me. They were bouncing on and off the wire fence. The whole yard of kids was now bouncing.
Stop that! Stop that!
Screamed a nun as she came running from the building.
Stop that!
The whole yard was in an uproar of laughter. As the nun approached, the kids began bouncing off the fence and running in all directions. The laughter continued as the nun chased us into the building. I sat on the curb of the playroom. I watched Butch ride the big purple bike and wondered how long he'd be in this place. I was hoping he'd go home or something so I could ride the bike. I spotted Stacy enter from the far side of the room. I crawled away from the curb and around to the back of one of the pillars. The last thing I wanted was for her to get talking to me again.
Hello. What are you doing back here? Are you playing a game or something?
Stacy looked around to see who I might be playing with.
No, I said. I was just thinking.
About what?
She asked as she plopped down next to me.
Oh, gosh. There, you said it again. Why do you say, oh, gosh?
I like to say, oh, gosh.
Why?
Oh, gosh.
I think you're embarrassed. Are you embarrassed?
I felt the redness approaching. I'm not embarrassed, I fibbed.
I'm just not used to talking to girls, that's all.
Is it different than talking to boys?
Oh, gosh.
I got to my feet.
I'm tired now. I'm going to go to bed.
I began to back away from her toward the curb.
I'll see ya.
All right,
she said quietly. I dashed across the raceway and opened the door marked boys. I looked back. She was still on the floor where I'd left her. There was disappointment on her face, almost a sadness. I saw in her what I felt in me when Mark told me he didn't want to play with me. I closed the door. I took a deep breath and began to make my way around the room back to Stacy. I thought if I went the long way, I might gather some courage on the way. I reached her.
You came back.
I didn't explain why, and she didn't ask me. I let her do the talking. She was good at that. She told me she lived in Elmhurst, Queens. She said her real father left her mother when she was a little baby.
Mom's new husband talked her into putting me in this place. I don't think he likes me very much.
I was half listening and half watching out for anyone who might be watching me. Suddenly, she leaned over and kissed me. She jumped to her feet, dashed across the floor, and slipped through the door marked girls. I sat on the floor with my hand covering my cheek. The redness I expected to overcome me never came. I got to my feet. Slowly, I retraced my steps the long way around the room. The dormitory was dark and empty. I took the things from the chest alongside bed 27 and entered the bathroom. I felt as though I were in slow motion. I couldn't understand what was wrong with me. I changed, washed only one half of my face, and then floated out of the bathroom. The dormitory was now lighted, and some of the kids were coming in. The line began forming at Sister Claire's desk, and I joined it. I waited with the others as the line grew longer. Mark joined the line. I looked in his direction, but he was looking down at the floor. Sister Claire was late, and the line was getting long. Some of the bigger kids started coming into the room.
"Look at the babies waiting for their dollies," Butch shouted.
His remark caused some of the kids to leave the line and their fuzzy friends. I didn't. Mark didn't.
"Hey, Fatso, I didn't know you had enough room in your bed for a dolly,"
Butch taunted someone behind me. It wasn't hard for me to guess who it was. I turned my head. Mark ignored Butch as usual, but Butch wasn't about to give up.
"What's the matter, Four Eyes? Can't you hear me talking to you?"
Mark again looked down at the floor. Some of the kids began laughing while others left the line. I stayed.
"Hey, Fatso, what are you looking down there for? Can't you find your feet?"
The room filled with mean laughter. I wanted to punch Butch in the nose, but I remembered what Mark had told me. Just ignore him and he'll go away. I kept my eyes on Mark. He was hurting, and I knew it. He wanted his little animal as much as I wanted mine. He stayed and took Butch's insults.
"Maybe, Dumbo, if you got a really skinny dolly."
Butch didn't have to finish his remark. He had won. In a roar of laughter, Mark left the line. I watched him make his way toward his bed. His head hung low.
"Where are you going, Four Eyes? The dollies are over here in this direction," Butch continued,
to the laughter of all the others. I leapt from my place onto Butch's back, knocking him to the floor. My advantage of surprise lasted but a few seconds. I threw as many punches as I could before he grabbed my arm. In one motion, he flipped me over his head and landed on my chest. He was the strongest kid in here. As my body slammed against the floor, he punched me in the eye. I saw stars. He was about to take a second shot when Sister Frances grabbed his arm and yanked him to his feet. She slapped her hand flush against his ear and dragged him to his bed. I was just getting to my feet when she returned for me. The blow to my ear was deafening. The next moment, I crashed into the top bars of bed 27. I untwisted my body, worked my way down under the blanket, and pulled it up over my head. I hurt. My eye and my ear were killing me. I lay beneath the covers for a long time. I wondered if I had made a mistake. I was in pain. Butch was going to kill me tomorrow. And worst of all, I didn't get doggy. But then again, friend or no friend, rule or no rule, I couldn't let Mark be hurt like that and not do anything about it. Some time passed before I poked my head from beneath the covers. The room was quiet and dark. The gray light from the street lamp made its way through the barred window across my bed cover. The ceiling was gone, and I was alone. Suddenly, there was a tug at my sleeve. I pulled my arm from the tug, but recognized the hair sticking straight up from the top of Mark's head.
"What are you doing here?"
"Stop talking down there,"
Sister Frances shouted from her desk. I whispered,
"What are you doing here?"
Mark's head turned almost a full circle, checking for safety. He whispered,
"I want to thank you for sticking up for me."
"Oh, it's nothing. That's what friends..." I gulped down the last words.
"It's nothing. No, you're right. That's what friends are for."
"But we're not friends," I said.
"Says you."
He spoke louder, then slapped his hand over his mouth.
"Says you,"
he whispered.
"Maybe it's not the smartest thing to do, you know, have a friend in here, but I'd like to try it."
A tear began to sting my eye. I wiped it away.
"Let's shake on it."
He extended his hand to me. I brought my hand around to meet his, but it wasn't there. He had replaced his hand with doggy. I grabbed him up and hugged him.
How'd you get him? Well, I got him instead of Brownie. He's my bear. But Mark, but nothing. Brownie'll understand.
He paused.
That's what friends are for.
He slipped down beneath the bed and was gone. I held Doggy close to my face. One minute I had had no friends, and the next minute I had two. For the next few days I wore my black eye proudly. Butch didn't kill me after all. In fact, he didn't say a single word to me. He still picked on as many kids as he could, but he seemed to leave Mark and me alone. Stacy wanted to kiss my eye when she saw it.
To make it better, she said,
but I didn't want her to. First, I couldn't let her keep on kissing me, and second, I didn't want it to get better. I kind of liked having a black eye. I was in the playroom with Mark when I saw a kid get off the big purple bike.
I'm going to take a ride, I said.
Oh, boy.
Mark quickly looked around the room for Butch. I didn't tell Mark, but I had already done that. I climbed aboard the bike. It was beautiful. It rode smoothly and quickly. On the second turn around the floor, Butch came into the room. He spotted me on the bike and started toward me. My heart pounded. He reached the edge of the curb, then sat down. My relief forced me to smile. He smiled back. In the weeks that followed, Butch, Fuzzy, and Brian, they were two of the boys who hung around with him, spent more and more time with Mark and me. We played games together, like punch ball and tag. And when it rained, we stayed inside and played Steal the Old Man's Pack and Slapjack. Butch stopped picking on almost all the kids, but kept on telling everyone how tough he was. We let him talk. Butch, Fuzzy, Mark, and I were in the day room one afternoon playing Go Fish when the first snow started to fall.
Look, it's snowing,
somebody yelled out. We were all excited. Mark told us about a snowman he had built one year. Fuzzy had to top him and told us he built a bigger one. Butch said he made the biggest one, and that was the end of that. I told him about sliding down Tybout Avenue on a crushed-up cardboard box I got from the A&P. They listened intently. They were all lifers and had never slid down any kind of a hill. We watched the silence of the falling snow.
Jennings!
Sister Frances called out. My goosebumps faded by the time I reached her. She took me from the room and brought me to the same front hall I'd been in about 1,000 years earlier when my mother had left me here. Maybe she'd come back? Is my mother here? Sister Frances didn't answer. My excitement grew. She opened the door next to the benches with the red cushions. Mom wasn't there. In the far corner of the office behind a desk was a nun I had never seen before. Alongside her desk sat a man and a lady. The man had a pudgy little face, a mustache, and wore glasses. He was bald on top of his head, but had curly brown hair on the sides. He wore a dark overcoat and a gray suit. He was holding his hat in his hands. Well, he wasn't exactly holding it. He was more like crushing it. He was twirling it all around his fingers. The lady had brownish-gray hair and wore a giant black hat tilted to one side. There were large flowers all over it. It looked awful. Her face was pasty, with gobs of red stuff plopped on each cheek. She wore a dark green coat and a blue dress with large white polka dots all over it.
Jennings, the nun at the desk said, this is Mr. and Mrs. Carpenter. They're going to take you home with them.
Why?
Because they like you. They want you to live with them for a while.
She smiled.
But, they don't know me. How could they like me? I want to stay with Mark.
You're going.
She stood up. She wasn't smiling anymore.
How will my mother know where I am?
I'll tell her,
she snapped. She nodded to Sister Frances, then turned to me.
Get your things.
Sister Frances took me into the dormitory and left me. She told me to hurry up and to meet her in the hall. I fought back the tears as I took all the things out of the cabinet alongside bed number 27. I stuffed them into the laundry bag. As I approached the doorway to the hall, I stopped. If I go out there, I won't get a chance to say goodbye to Mark or Stacy or anyone. I left through the rear door. I burst into the day room. Mark was still by the glass doors watching the snow. Mark's head turned as the door slammed into the wall. He saw me and knew. He turned back toward the snow. "I'm leaving," I mumbled.
"Yeah."
I extended my hand to his shoulder. He didn't look up at me, but he took my hand. He shook it. "Are you going home?" he asked, as though he were talking to the glass doors and the snow.
"No, I'm being lent out."
My lip quivered, as did my voice. Mark didn't say anything, he just sat there watching the gently falling snow.
"Will you say goodbye to Stacy and the others for me?"
He nodded his head. I stood there wanting to say more, but I couldn't. I slowly backed my way to the door and slipped out. Mark never looked back. Sister Frances took me to the front hall and the carpenters. They led the way down the now snow-covered steps, and I followed.
"Wait!"
I shouted. I turned back toward Sister Frances.
"Sister, I want Doggy. Can I have Doggy?"
"No, he doesn't belong to you,"
she started in the door.
"Oh yes, he does, he does."
I grabbed her around the waist.
"Oh please, sister, let me take him,"
I cried.
"No, he belongs to all the children."
"No, sister, he doesn't. He belongs to me. Nobody else wants him but me. Oh please."
"No."
She pushed me away and slammed the door. Doggy was gone. I felt the worst pain I had ever known. It wouldn't go away. The tears did not come to my eyes. I hurt too much. Mr. Carpenter put me in the back seat of the car and we drove off. They may or may not have spoken to me. I could hear nothing. My friend Doggy was gone. And I never even got a chance to say goodbye to him for keeps. Chapter 3. The windshield wipers squeaked and thumped, hissed and clicked. The strange collection of sounds lulled me into a sort of half-stare and half-sleep.
"Here we are," Mr. Carpenter said.
I sat up as the car pulled to the curb. I tried looking through the fogged-up window, but I couldn't see anything. I took a swipe at the window.
"Keep your dirty hands off the glass,"
Mrs. Carpenter snarled.
"Oh, leave him alone. He isn't hurting anything. Come on, Jenkins. Let's go."
The street was quiet. Everything in sight was covered by a pretty white blanket of snow. Even the garbage cans in front of all the houses along the street had little white hats on them. Mr. Carpenter opened a black metal gate and passed through it. Mrs. Carpenter followed him, and I followed her. We walked around to the back of the house, climbed the stairs, and went in through the kitchen. The room was warm and quiet. There was a small lamp lit over a large kitchen table. The room was sparkling clean. Mrs. Carpenter gave me some paper and a pencil and told me to sit at the small table. My table was a small wooden table with a chair to match. It was across the room from the large table with the lamp above it. She switched on the ceiling light and started fixing a pot of coffee. The clock above the stove said 5:45 p.m.
"Can I help you?" I asked.
"No,"
she was abrupt.
"You'll break something, and then where will my profits go?"
I didn't understand the profits part, but I did understand the no. When she finished, she turned off the ceiling light and left the room. I could hear whispers through the closed door. I was sure they were talking about me. The room grew darker as the daylight faded. What I thought was a little light from the lamp above the big table wasn't any light at all. It only lit the area of the table. The walls with sink, stove and icebox were in the dark shadows. So was I. Mrs. Carpenter came back into the kitchen and turned on the ceiling light. She began to prepare dinner. Mr. Carpenter came in and sat at the big table. He unwrinkled a newspaper and started to read.
"There's a Bogart film at the King's Park," he told her. "Treasure of the Sierra Madre."
"You know I can't go anywhere with this damn kid around."
"Well, who the hell asked you to take him?"
He dropped his paper to the table.
"You know we need the money," she said. Then she added sarcastically, "You certainly don't earn enough, and I can't work, sickly as I am."
He grunted, then continued to read his paper. She served him a sandwich.
"Isn't he going to eat?" he asked.
I perked up. I was hungry. I wouldn't mind one of those sandwiches.
"No, he told me he ate plenty before he left the home."
She lied, but I didn't know why. I didn't like this lady. I didn't like her at all. After Mr. and Mrs. Carpenter left the kitchen, I drew a picture of Doggy. I put a hat and a scarf on him. I made all the dots for the snowflakes, and then drew some trees around him. It was the first time Doggy was ever away from his cage and out of the home. I kissed him. Light flooded the room. Mrs. Carpenter came in and yanked me from the chair. She dragged me through the dining room and a foyer, then pushed me into a bedroom. The room was small and bare. There was a bed with a brown blanket and no pillow, a chest like the one at the home, and a chair by the window. The window had no bars. I sat on the bed as Mrs. Carpenter switched off the light. I said goodnight to a closing door. I lay alone in the dark of the small room. It was the first time in my life I was ever alone in a bedroom. I was frightened. Not afraid of the dark or anything like that, just afraid. When I was at home with Mom and my brothers, Larry, Jean, and I slept in one bed, while George and Walter slept in another. We all slept in the same room. I remember how we used to lie in the dark and play alphabet games. Someone would pick a topic like cars or something, and we would all try to name things in that topic with the letters of the alphabet. Jean never played. He always fell asleep right away. I never got much past C or D myself, but it was fun. I sure wish my brothers were here now to play with me. A. Let's see now. Austin Healy. B. Buick. C. In the morning, I dressed and left the bedroom for the kitchen. I passed a staircase in the hall, then stopped. With Mrs. Carpenter in the kitchen, I thought this might be a good time to explore. I climbed the stairs.
"Where are you going?"
she screamed. She was standing just above me on the stairs. She wasn't in the kitchen at all. I turned in mid-step and scurried down the stairs. I ran through the dining room into the kitchen. I sat at the table, my heart pounding. She came in. I cowered in the chair, covering my ears. She brushed past me, heading for her work counter. She didn't hit me. She switched on a radio next to her. A man with a very deep voice said,
does everything.
She changed stations. Another man with an even deeper voice said,
the guiding light.
A whole bunch of high-pitched voices began singing a jingle as Mrs. Carpenter began speaking to me from over her shoulder.
"You better get used to the rules around here or I'll beat the daylights out of you."
I tried listening to her and the singers.
"The bedroom is for sleeping. The rest of the house is off limits to you. You're to sit at that table and that table only. If you don't, you'll get it. Understand?"
I nodded my head, but she didn't see me.
"Do you understand?"
she screeched. I jolted to attention in the chair. "Yes," I said.
"Yes, ma'am,"
she added. "Yes, ma'am," I repeated.
"And if you break anything around here, God help you."
She mumbled,
I make little enough money off you as it is.
She turned from the counter and rushed at me. I ducked my head below my hands. She plopped a bowl down in front of me.
Eat,
she commanded. She went back to her counter. It was a grayish blob of icy stuff. I think it was oatmeal, but I really couldn't be sure. It was thick and gluey, and it smelled funny. I tasted it.
Ech! I don't like this stuff.
Again, she rushed at me and I ducked. She snatched up the bowl. As I waited for her to bring me something else, I looked around for my picture of Doggy.
Did you see my picture anywhere?
Ma'am?
I threw it out. I don't want a whole lot of junk cluttering up my kitchen.
I felt badly. It hurt me to think of Doggy in the garbage. I decided if I ever drew something I wanted, I'd never leave it lying around. Mrs. Carpenter finished her work at the counter, switched off the radio, and left the room. She didn't fix me anything else. I guess I wasn't surprised. Hungry, maybe, but not surprised. I sat looking up at the wall next to the table. There was a lot more on the wall than I realized. There were tiny dots and little lines. There were bumps and cracks. At about 1 o'clock, I stuck my head out the door and called, "Mrs. Carpenter, ma'am?"
"What do you want?"
She startled me. She was sitting not 5 feet from the door.
I'm hungry. I was wondering.
"We eat breakfast and dinner around here, and that's all," she snarled. "I can't afford to be feeding you any time you feel like eating. Besides, you're not worth it, you dirty little bastard. Now get back to your table."
I pulled my head into the kitchen. I returned to the table and buried my head in my arms. I didn't want her to hear me crying. The day gave way to night, and the room darkened. I sat looking at the thin strip of light working its way in under the door from the dining room. I was falling off to sleep when Mrs. Carpenter came in. I covered my eyes to readjust to the room light. She went to work at her counter. She was making hamburgers for dinner. I was starving. When they started to cook, they smelled and sounded wonderful. I couldn't imagine how she could ruin them, but I decided I'd better wait until I tasted them. Mr. Carpenter came in at 7:15. He sat at the big table and unfolded his paper. He read a few things to her, but she didn't seem interested. He didn't speak to me at all.
"I sure would like to get a television set," he said.
"A what?"
"A television set."
"How could we afford one of those?" she asked.
"They're really improving them, you know. Look how many programs are on the air now."
He held up part of the paper for her to look. She didn't.
"What's wrong with radio?" she asked.
"Nothing. I like radio. But I thought a television would be nice. Texaco Star Theater. The Life of Riley. Toast of..."
"Frank, forget about television sets and eat."
She served each of them a hamburger. She placed the same bowl of gray gook I had rejected that morning in front of me. I was disappointed. I decided to try it again. I tasted it. It was cold and sticky and awful. I could barely get the mouthful down before gagging. I pushed it away. Mr. Carpenter finished his hamburger and left. I covered my head with my arms until she finished cleaning up. She took the bowl from the table but said nothing. When I was sure she wasn't going to hit me, I uncovered my head. She turned off the ceiling light and left the room. I sat at the little table and wondered if I'd ever eat again. I started to think about the first days at the home of the angels when I didn't eat for a long time. I wished I had some of that stew now. Even a piece of bread or a roll would be great. I wished I was back at the home with Mark and Doggy. I drew another picture of Doggy. This time, he was standing in the middle of all these trees, with a great pile of hamburgers next to him. After I kissed him, I folded him up and stuck him in my pocket. The next morning, I sat at the little table in front of the same bowl of sticky stuff. I didn't bother to smell it or taste it or anything. I just pushed it to the edge of the table and closed my eyes. The next little tap sent it crashing to the floor. Mrs. Carpenter went into a rage. She grabbed me by the hair and yanked me from the chair. She punched me in the side of the head and threw me to the floor. I drew in my arms and legs to make myself a smaller target, but it didn't help. She smashed me across the back with a stick or something. On the second hit, she caught me across the back of my legs. I crawled under the big table. Her third shot hit the table legs and the chairs.
"Come out!"
she screamed. I wouldn't move. She again hit the sides of the table legs with her stick. I crawled in deeper. She mumbled to herself while she cleaned up the pieces of the broken bowl. She slammed things around and took one more shot at the table legs before she gave up and left the room. I lay piled up on the floor. I began to feel the pain in my back and legs. I thought I might die under this table, and maybe it would be soon. I was hurting and hungry. I reached down into my pocket and pulled out Doggy's picture. I kissed him and pressed him close to my face. "I don't think Mom's ever going to come for us," I told him. "I don't think we're ever going to leave this place." I closed my eyes. "Doggy, I'm going to stay under here forever." I clenched Doggy tightly in my hand. The floor was hard and cold. Each time I thought I heard her coming, I held my breath. The table and chair legs were like the bars of a cage around me. This time they weren't keeping me in. They were keeping her out. The hours passed slowly. The morning sun turned to afternoon shadows. Then the shadows to night. I lay on the floor, watching the thin strip of light under the kitchen door. I was awakened by Mrs. Carpenter moving around the kitchen. I could see only her legs and her feet. I knew she was fixing dinner. I could smell it.
"Where's Jenkins?"
Mr. Carpenter asked as he entered the room. He didn't wipe his feet very well. The edges of his shoes were still wet from the snow.
"He's under the table."
"Under the table? What's he doing under there?"
He poked his head under to see me.
"He's playing or something. What the hell do I know about these damn kids? Half of them are crazy," she said.
"Hey, son, what are you doing down there?"
I crawled in deeper. I stuffed Doggy in my pocket for fear they might take him and throw him in the garbage again.
"What's the matter, Jenkins?"
"Nothing."
"Come on out of there."
He offered me his hand. He had always been nice to me. He wasn't very friendly or anything like that, but he'd never hurt me. I gave him my hand and crawled out. As I stood up, he touched my back, and I winced.
"Did you hit him?" he asked sternly.
"No,"
she lied. He lifted my shirt and saw the welt mark.
"You hit him, damn it."
"I did not. He fell."
"That's it, Edna. Hit him one more time and he goes back, you hear me? Money or no money, he goes back. I'm not going to have you beating up all these kids. You listening to me, Edna?"
"He fell, God damn it! I didn't hit him,"
she screamed. He held my shoulders and looked me in the eye.
"Now don't be afraid, Jenkins. Did she hit you?"
I didn't have to answer him. My tears came easily.
"I'm warning you, Edna."
She slammed things around the counter.
"He breaks my good bowl, and that's okay. Don't punish him. Oh, no. Just mollycoddle the son of a bitch."
Mr. Carpenter sat me at the little table. He sat at his usual place and picked up his newspaper. I stared at the spots on the wall and planned my escape. I had to get out of here before he left for work in the morning. She served the dinner. I didn't bother to look at what they were having. It didn't matter.
"Aren't you going to feed him?" he asked.
"After he breaks my good china? Not on your life."
Mr. Carpenter was now his usual self. He said nothing. With dinner now over and the carpenters gone from the room, I sat and watched the thin strip of light. I was ready. I went over to the back door and tugged. It was locked. I opened one of the two bolts. The other one I couldn't reach without a chair. As quietly as I could, I got a chair from the big table. I pushed as hard as I could, but the bolt wouldn't open. I searched around the kitchen for something I might use to hit it. In one of the bottom cabinets, I found two things. The hammer I needed for the bolt, and a box of Jell-O powder. I tore open the box and tasted it. "Wow, that's sour," I said quietly. I took another taste. I was so hungry it didn't matter how sour it was. I was going to eat it. My eyes were almost closed completely from the sourness of the Jell-O. I ate the whole box before I could get my eyes open again. I crushed up the empty box and stuck it in my pocket. I returned to the door. I tapped lightly at the bolt on the door, but nothing happened. I knew I would have to give it one good whack. "What if I can't get the chair out of the way before she gets in here?" I thought out loud. "Oh, what difference does it make? She's going to kill me anyway." I closed my eyes and swung as hard as I could. I missed. The hammer went crashing through one of the panes of glass in the door. Mrs. Carpenter was there in a flash. Before I could even think about getting down from the chair, the room was ablaze with light, and she was on me. She punched me in the stomach and knocked me to the floor. She began kicking me.
"What the hell is going on here?"
Mr. Carpenter screamed as he rushed into the room.
"I'm going to kill him,"
she screeched. I believed her. Her eyes were red with fire. She leaned down and clenched my shirt with her hand. She lifted me straight off the floor a few feet, then dropped me. He grabbed her arm and swung her around. I thought he was going to hit her, but he didn't. He just held her off.
"That's it, Edna. Tomorrow he goes back."
Chapter 4. Sister Frances grabbed my ear and led me from the office.
"Now see what you've done," she scolded. "Those nice people won't take any more kids, thanks to you. It's hard enough to find places to house you kids without... ah, what's the use?"
She pushed me through the day room door and left me. I once again stood in the middle of what seemed to be 1,000 staring eyes. This time, I smiled.
"Jennings!"
Mark shouted. He was just coming in from the yard, and he was covered with snow. As I made my way through the kids, one or two of them patted me on the back. In a strange sort of way, I was home.
"Well, that didn't take long," Mark said.
"Long enough. I'm starving. When do we eat?"
"Soon. Pretty soon. Either you're getting like me, or they didn't feed you."
They didn't feed me. I sat down at one of the checkerboard tables. I held my aching stomach. Some of the kids gathered around to hear the tale of the Carpenters.
"Mrs. Carpenter is crazy," I said. "She cursed all the time, yelled and screamed at me, and made me sit at this little tiny table the whole time I was there."
Some of the kids made faces. Others just stared at me.
"It was awful," I said. "She gave me this gluey stuff that smelled like dirty feet. I couldn't eat it. Then she beat me up."
I lifted my shirt to show them my welt marks. After a time, the group of kids drifted off. I stayed talking to Mark.
"Oh, wait," I said. "I got something to show you."
I took out the picture of Doggy.
"What do you think?"
He looked long and hard at the picture.
"Don't show this to Doggy."
We laughed.
"Jennings!"
someone called out. I looked up and saw Stacy in the doorway. Her two hands were touching her lips, like the way you hold your hands in church. Tears were in her eyes. I stood up when she reached me. I took her outstretched hand, and she kissed my cheek.
"Oh, gosh," I said.
I slid back down into my seat. My face grew very red. She sat down.
"I didn't think I'd ever see you again," she said.
"I didn't think so either.
Some of the kids in the yard told me a boy had just returned from an awful home. I didn't know they were talking about you. I'm sorry they treated you so badly."
"Oh, gosh."
Click.
I shot straight out of my chair, then panicked.
I couldn't find 26's funny ears. The second click sounded, and the kids lined up. I stayed where I was and covered my ears as a nun I hadn't seen before approached me.
Well, she said,
I don't know where I'm supposed to be, sister. I just got here.
My heart pounded. I didn't want to be punished just now. I was too hungry for that.
Come along, she said. She took my hand. She placed me at Mark's table. My new number was 12, just 3 places away from Mark.
We managed to smile at each other. I watched the sisters serving meatloaf. My mouth watered and my stomach ached. I gobbled down everything in minutes, including some bread and butter. I began to feel sick. My head started spinning, and my stomach ached even more.
Sister, I'm going to be sick, I called out.
Sister Frances was there in a flash to race me from the room. I just barely made it to a sink in the kitchen before it all came up. Sister Frances held my head and my shoulders.
Get the nurse, she told someone.
She sat me down on a chair. When the nurse came in, she felt my forehead and asked me how I felt and what was wrong.
I don't know, ma'am.
Well, what did you eat this morning?
Nothing.
And last night?
Nothing. Oh, wait. I did eat a box of Jell-O powder.
Jell-O powder? No wonder you're sick. Why did you eat Jell-O powder? Sister Frances asked.
I was hungry, sister. I had to eat something.
Didn't they feed you? The tears came to my eyes. I shook my head no.
Not at all? The nurse asked.
Again, I shook my head no. Sister Frances sat me down at a table in the kitchen. She ordered one of the kitchen sisters to bring me some soup.
No bread, she said. Just the soup.
She brushed back the hair on my head and left. For a moment, she seemed different. A little like Sister Claire. I finished the soup. Sister Frances came back and took me through the now empty dining room to the outside hall. We entered the stern nun's office, and she sat me down.
Now, Jennings, I want you to tell Sister Margaret and me about your stay with the Carpenters.
At first, I hesitated because I was nervous. But then I told them everything. They listened in silence. I said I was sorry for breaking the bowl and the window. I thought they would be angry with me, but they weren't. I told them about the curse words Mrs. Carpenter used all the time. I wouldn't say the words, but I did use the first letter of each of them. I showed them my welt marks, and then I showed them my picture of Doggy.
What are these things beside him? Sister Margaret asked. Hamburgers.
She laughed. Sister Frances took me to the day room. I sat near the glass doors and watched some of the part-timers playing in the yard. Stacy was helping with a snowman. Mark and the other lifers were at school. At bedtime, Sister Frances handed me Doggy. I hugged him. He felt so soft and good. I carried him to bed number 12 and made a place for him. I showed him his picture. He thought it was a good likeness. I waved to Mark, and he waved back. I slid beneath the covers and brought Doggy close to me.
I love you, Doggy, I whispered.
I closed my eyes to sleep. I was very tired. After breakfast the next morning, we were clicked into the playroom. Some of the kids got their coats and went into the yard. Mark and I, as well as some other kids, stayed in. It was too cold.
Click!
We sat at attention. Sister Frances called Stacy. Mark and I looked at one another as Stacy cautiously approached Sister Frances. They left the playroom.
What do you think? I asked.
Mark shrugged his shoulders.
Maybe she's being lent out.
Oh, gosh, I shuddered. But maybe she's going home, he added.
Yeah,
I smiled.
Maybe she's going home.
The sudden happy thought faded. It was replaced by a feeling I hadn't felt before.
Now you know what I mean, Mark said dryly.
He pushed his glasses back on his nose.
What?
About the kids' rule, no friends, he said. It's hard to explain the feeling. You just feel it.
I feel it, I mumbled.
Stacy burst into the room.
I'm going home,
she screeched. The room fell into silence. Some of the girls gathered around her. After she spoke to them, she came over to Mark and me.
I'll think about you, she said.
Her eyes sparkled. She looked beautiful. I'll think about you, too, I said.
If you ever get to Elmhurst...
She broke off. I nodded my head. She leaned over and kissed my cheek.
Bye,
she said.
Bye. Bye, Mark.
Bye, Stacy.
She slipped out the playroom door. I looked for a long moment at the closed door. My hand was covering my cheek and the kiss.
Bye,
I said to no one.
Come on,
Mark said. He tugged at my arm. It's better to forget about her as soon as possible. He spoke like a wise old man who had experienced these things so many times before that you just had to listen to him. He nodded his head.
It's better.
It took me quite a few days to forget about Stacy. Well, not exactly forget about her, but at least be able to get through the day without thinking about her too much or longing that much more for home. One morning, Mark woke me up.
Get up,
he said. He was excited about something. What's up?
I gotta show you something.
He ran off into the bathroom. I got out of bed and followed him. I was still very sleepy. I walked with my eyes a little open and a little closed.
Well, you'll see,
he grinned.
You'll see.
He looked around and then reached into his laundry bag. He pulled out his bear, Brownie.
He escaped.
Shh. He put his finger to his lips.
He escaped,
I whispered.
Last night, he said quietly. He somehow got stuck under my pillow. They didn't collect him. Wow, that's terrific.
Shh. That's terrific,
I whispered. I spent the rest of the day planning Doggy's escape. Night finally came. I anxiously waited online for Doggy. Sister Claire came in.
Sister Claire,
I shouted. I slapped my hand over my mouth. I was so surprised to see her, I had forgotten the rule of silence.
That's all right, Jennings, she said.
She put out her hand for me to come to her. I ran from my place in line. I reached her and threw my arms around her waist. She leaned down and kissed the top of my head.
Where have you been?
I asked.
I was on retreat.
What's retreat? That's where sisters go to pray.
Oh, that don't sound like much fun.
Well, it's fun for me, she smiled. She turned and unlocked the cabinet. She opened it and handed out the animals. She handed me Doggy. I tucked him under my arm. As I passed Mark's bed, I winked, and he winked back. I placed Doggy down on the bed and climbed in after him. We slid beneath the covers.
I got a plan, I said.
He was anxious to know what it was, so I told him. He was as excited about it as I was. In case things didn't go very well, I gave him an extra kiss and a hug. I tucked him under my pillow and I lay back. Sister Claire came over to me.
And how have you been? She asked.
All right, sister.
I heard you had a bad experience.
I did?
At the Carpenters?
Oh, yeah. It was awful.
I made a face.
Sister Margaret isn't going to send any more children there.
Listen, Jennings.
She brushed the hair off my forehead.
I want to say goodbye to you.
Goodbye,
I sat up.
Where are you going?
I've been reassigned. I'm going to teach at a girls' school in Queens.
In Queens? Oh, gosh.
I fell back on my pillow.
Now, don't be sad, she said. You promised to be a good soldier for me.
Oh, gosh.
But I'll miss you, sister.
I know.
I'll miss you, too, she said. I'll pray every day for you.
All right?
Well, it's not as good as seeing you.
No, she laughed.
It's not as good as seeing me, but it's the best I can do.
Oh, all right.
if it's the best you can do.
I sat back up and put my arms around her. I hugged her. She hugged me back and then placed me back down on the pillow. She brought the blanket up to my chin.
Where's Doggy? Doggy?
Yes, Doggy. Remember the brown and white fuzzy thing you sleep with every night?
Oh, that Doggy.
Yes, that one, she laughed. Where is he?
Oh, he's around.
Around where? I lifted my pillow and took him out.
Well, what's he doing under there? He was just sleeping.
She smiled. You know, Jennings, if Doggy were under your pillow when I collect them later, I might miss him.
Really?
Really. Maybe you ought to keep him tucked under your chin where he belongs, she said. She put him alongside me under the blanket.
Sister, why do you do that?
Do what?
Cage the animals at night?
Well, she looked up and out through the barred window before answering me.
We don't want to, Jennings, but we have to. You see, the animals that are given to us, we have to take care of. If we didn't cage them up in one place, we might lose them. They might get hurt or damaged. It's not the best thing, but it's the only way we have to take care of them.
But if somebody loved one of them, I asked, wouldn't it be a good idea to let them have one? To keep, I mean?
Yes, it would be. But not everyone would love them and take care of them as you would.
I wish I could give them all away tomorrow. She looked at me. There were tears in her eyes.
But I can't. My heart would break if I saw just one of those animals lying by the wayside uncared for, unloved. No, Jennings. It's better if we keep them together.
She kissed my forehead and left. I hugged Doggy and thought about what Sister Claire had said. I knew I couldn't take Doggy now. I knew he'd understand.
Doggy, I whispered, if I ever do take you, I promise I'll take good care of you and love you.
I awoke to the sound of a thud. I popped my head out from the covers to see what had made the noise. The sun was just starting to come up over the building across the courtyard, so I knew it was too early to get up. The thud was the boy in the next bed. He had fallen out. He was just getting to his feet and rubbing his head when I thought of Doggy. He was gone. I looked at the other sleeping kids. Their animals were gone, too. I pulled the cover back over me and snuggled to my pillow. Suddenly, I sat up and lifted my pillow. There was Doggy, looking up at me. A note was attached to him. I took it off and read it. Dear Jennings, when I said praying for you was the best I could do, I was wrong. Let Doggy out once in a while for air. Most of all, be good to him. Our kind of animals need lots of love. Forever in my prayers, Sister Claire. I hugged Doggy and put him under my pillow. Each morning, Mark and I put our friends in our laundry bags. At night, we took them to bed. We shared a secret that somehow made us a little different from the other kids. It made us a little closer. The weather was getting very cold. Most of the kids stayed in the day room. Sister Frances told us it was Wednesday, the 21st of December, and Christ's birthday was just 4 days away. She gave us some paper and paste and scissors to make some cutouts for the blackboard. Mark was making a snowflake, while I was making an angel. I was telling Mark how Christmas was on the outside.
What you doing? Butch asked.
Making cutouts, I said.
That's kid stuff.
Yeah, we know, Mark said. We're kids.
What you want to go and make that junk for?
It's not junk. It's angels and snowflakes for Christmas.
It's junk.
You sound like Scrooge, I said.
Who?
Ebenezer Scrooge. You know, Scrooge from the story.
No, who's he?
He's the guy who hated Christmas. Didn't you ever hear of him?
Butch shook his head no. So did Mark.
Well, last year, a sister from my school told us a story. Let's see. I can't think of the name of it,
A Christmas Carol, I remembered. It was all about this guy who hated Christmas.
Will you tell us the story? Mark asked.
Yeah, will you?
Butch sat down.
Sure. Sure I will.
I told the story the best I could. As I talked, more and more kids began to gather around. Some of those who knew the story helped me in the parts I got stuck on. But the story went along very well. Soon every kid in the room was sitting on the floor, or in chairs, or on the tables, listening to the story. Their wide eyes bulged at the parts of the different ghosts. When the story was finished, everyone drifted off. Mark and I returned to our cutouts. Butch joined us. We talked about Christmas at the home. They told me the nuns sing a lot and put the baby Jesus in his manger.
Do we get a Christmas tree? I asked.
No, no tree. The sisters don't like trees, I guess, Mark said.
Do we get presents?
Both Mark and Butch shook their heads no.
Well, that's okay, I said. I didn't always get a present on the outside, either. My mom didn't always have enough money for presents.
I never got a present, Mark said.
Never?
Mark shook his head.
Some lifers got presents. When they were little. If they were out during Christmas, they got some.
Did you ever get a present, Butch?
Yeah, I got one a long time ago, when I was real little.
What was it?
Oh, it wasn't anything special.
What?
It was a panda bear.
Oh, yeah, Mark said. Where is it? What happened to it?
Oh, it's gone. The lady who gifted it to me took it back. She said she'd save it for me if and I ever went back.
Jennings?
A nun called me from the doorway. A cold chill ran all over me. I looked at both Butch and Mark.
Jennings Birch, she called again.
Oh gosh, not another Carpenter's. I put down my angel and got to my feet. I approached the nun. She took me from the room.
Am I being lent out? I asked.
I don't know, son. I was only told to fetch you.
Oh gosh, I don't want to go away again. I want to stay here.
I felt the stinging in my nose. She opened the office door, and there was Mom.
Mom!
I cried. I ran into her open arms. She kissed and hugged me. I cried uncontrollably.
Shh, dear. I'm here now. I'm here now.
I couldn't talk. I tried, but I couldn't. I leaned into her and cried. She smelled like Mom. It was really Mom.
Where were you?
I yelled at her through my tears. I clenched my fist and hit her.
Don't hit your mother,
Sister Margaret snapped. I fell back into Mom and cried harder.
I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
Shh, Jennings, don't cry anymore. She hugged me and kissed my forehead.
Come on now, stop crying, she said.
After a few minutes, to calm myself, I asked,
Mom, can we take Mark home with us?
Mark? Who's Mark?
Don't be foolish, Jennings, Sister Margaret said. Go now and get your things.
Mark is my friend. He lives here. Can we take him home? Can we?
What will his mother say?
He don't got no mother. He's a lifer, an orphan. Can we take him?
Jennings, I'm sorry, I just can't take...
Certainly she can't.
Sister Margaret stood up. She was mad.
Now that's enough of that. Go and get your things.
She pointed toward the door.
Now.
But.
No buts. Now.
Oh gosh,
I whined. I left the office. I went into the dormitory and packed up all my things, including Doggy. I left through the rear door for the day room. Mark and Butch were still at the table working on their cutouts. I approached them. Butch looked up and saw me first.
Are you going?
He asked.
Yes,
I said.
Home?
Mark asked. I nodded my head yes. Butch crumpled up the cutout he was making and pushed himself away from the table.
Bye,
he said quietly. He walked over to the glass doors and pushed them open.
Bye,
I whispered. I turned over the angel I was making. I wrote on the back of it, "To my friend."